Another passage which I'm going to speak about tonight is one that many of you most probably already enjoy. And I hope that I'm not going to ruin it for you. Because I've been asked to share my own thoughts, my own experiences and my own views. So most probably isn't going to be a sermon. It's not going to be even a Bible study. But maybe what I've got from it in my experience. So I hope I won't ruin it for you who love it already, because I'm sure you've got your own views and your own experiences from this passage. And you'll have to bear with me if they're not exactly the same as yours. Brian phoned me up and said, is there a favourite psalm that I have? Could I speak on it? So I mentioned these few verses, and Ian was only too quick to remind me that it's a proverb and not a psalm. But as he's desperate for someone to speak, he said he'd let me off. So this is why we had this slight deviation tonight. The passage, as I said, is from Proverbs, and Proverbs are the wisdom of Solomon, great man. Solomon, the Bible says, loved the Lord. He prayed for understanding of good and evil. And he often was put to the test in administration and in diplomacy. And his wisdom was known around the world, and people came to him for words of wisdom. And I believe Proverbs exists, therefore, for all generations, particularly that lovely one, it is better to live on the roof of the house than with a nagging wife. No, I don't mean that really, dear. Let's just look at this verse together then. Just remind ourselves. Proverbs chapter 3, verses 5 and 6. Trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him and he will make your path straight. I'm going to refer to these verses or one or two of these lines as I'm talking, and I'll leave it to you to sort of say, oh yes, that's a bit from there and that's a bit from there, rather than me keep going back to the passage and saying, do you remember this was said there? Okay. I was first pointed to these few verses when I was baptized in 1967. And it's customary then for people to pick one or two verses for those who have been baptized. And I'm to practice that we still do today. And these two verses were given to me. I don't know by whom, but I do thank that person for doing that. And I've got a little book at home that says Derek Point was baptized on this date, and these verses are written there for me. I must admit, though, at the time, and for some period afterwards, though I didn't take any notice of the verses. They didn't mean anything to me. And in a way, these verses have within them an understanding that's going to be in retrospect. Let me explain what I mean. You're challenged in these verses to trust in the Lord. You're challenged to acknowledge him. And then there's a promise that he will make your path straight. The path, presumed, is our direction of our life, the way we go. And by its very nature, therefore, it's only when you look back can you see it being fulfilled. In a way, this passage is about faith, isn't it? We're challenged to trust and we're challenged to acknowledge God. And therefore, you don't always see a tangible result immediately. That doesn't mean that God hasn't worked. But sometimes it's not until we look back that we find it clear in our mind that, yes, God was working. And then it becomes more tangible to us. An example of this, and this is where I hope to bring one or two examples in my own life, just one or two, was when I was first converted. A friend of mine who I used to go and have a few drinks with and social events, and was also a colleague of mine at work. We're both engineering apprentices together. And he became a Christian. And one day he dragged me along one evening to a farm south of Birmingham, which they were converting. And it was going to be a drugs rehabilitation centre for young people. And whilst I was looking around there, I came into contact with an old Sunday school superintendent, as they were called then. There's a smile there. And I began to realise that this was most probably a bit of a setup. This guy drove me home and he said to me, "Now then, Derek, don't forget what we taught you at Sunday school." Well, to be prompt, to be honest with you, I didn't remember anything at Sunday school. My brain just wasn't functioning at all. I couldn't tell you a single Bible study. I went to church, sent there by my parents, lovely church, very evangelical. But it didn't sink into my head at all. I remember once they did an appeal and I put my hand up, not really realising what I was doing, and that was the end of that. But I would say, and I would encourage you, if you're in the Sunday school teacher, that I believe that those Sunday school teachers' work, God was going to honour one day. And it was in my early 20s when God challenged me again about becoming a Christian. So I would encourage you, you know, this work is important, and I believe God answers prayer. Anyway, I got home that night, and I prayed something along the lines of, "God, I want to be right with you. It's better than going to hell." It's very evangelical. It's the sort of message you hear Ian say all the time up here. I didn't know that you had to realize you were a sinner. I didn't know that Jesus died for me on the cross. I didn't know any of that. I just wanted to be right with God. That's all I knew. So the next day, I was at work. A colleague of mine was there, and I said, "I made this prayer last night." "Oh, great," he said. "How do you feel?" I said, "No difference at all. Nothing. Absolutely nothing at all." He was naturally disappointed. And he said, "Well, why don't you come to a church service this Sunday in Birmingham?" So I went. Now, again, don't ask me what they were talking about. I had no idea. No idea what the sermon was about. Sorry, Ian, but... No, it wasn't you. You were too young, of course. I think, naturally, they were commissioning some missionaries somewhere. But it was always traditional, apparently, at this church, no matter what the service was, there was always an appeal at the end. So I was at the back of the church, I put my hand up. Yeah, okay. I went to the back and I was prayed for. And I didn't feel any different. Difficult, aren't I? My girlfriend was with me at the time. She was not happy that I had become a Christian. Not happy at all. She'd seen what religion could do to other people. And she didn't like it. In fact, it was 2 years later that she became a Christian, and then we got married. But at that time, she was not happy. And I must admit, other Christians told me then, "You ought to separate from this girl," but I didn't. But that's a different story. It's a long story. And if you want to know about that, you can ask me afterwards. But I then told my parents that I'd become a Christian. Their reaction again was that they were not happy. My mother's reaction was, "Well, it's better than him turning to drugs." That's how she thought about it. My friends at work, it was hilarious. We got now two Christians at work. So then the christened one the Pope and the other one the Archbishop. Can't remember which was which, but I think I was C of E. The friends didn't want to know us. My friends disappeared very quickly. Asked to no more parties, no more social events, and the phone didn't ring anymore. And I began to realise, as I looked back, that as I acknowledged him in my ways, God was directing my path. Because instead of my faith becoming weaker, as one might anticipate, it actually became stronger. I came more convinced that I was a sinner. I came more convinced of how much Jesus had done in my life. The gospel became clearer the more I had to stand up for myself. And I realized then just how much God loved me. And my Christian faith really became real to me. So as I acknowledged him, so I found he directed my path. And that's why I say in retrospect, only when I look back did I find this worked. And I think these two verses could easily have found their way into the New Testament. Could you imagine these two verses being in one of Paul's letters? That being one of Paul's letters, I don't think anyone would have argued with him, would they? That they are so beautiful. There are many people in the Old Testament or in the Bible that we could look at which would demonstrate how these verses worked out in their lives. So I am now just going to look at one or two of those, and then I'll come back to maybe another experience in my own life. Job. How about this guy? Everything in his life had gone wrong. You know the story. You most probably know better than I do. All his friends were telling him that he must be in the wrong. It was his fault. But he refused to deny God. He says this to his friends. As surely as God lives, who has denied me justice, the Almighty who has made me taste bitterness of soul, as long as I have life within me, the breath of my God in my nostrils, my lips will not speak wickedness, and my tongue will utter no deceit. I will never admit to you that you are right. Until I die, I will not deny my integrity. I will maintain my righteousness and never let it go, never let go of it. My conscience will not reproach me as long as I live. He, in a way, could not lean to his own understanding, could he? He couldn't lean to his own understanding. His understanding of what was happening was totally gone. But he was not going to deny his God. Daniel, who fell into the trap of Nebuchadnezzar's astrologers, continued to worship God, even though it meant death. The fiery furnace. He was going to acknowledge God, and he was not going to lean to his own understanding. And basically he did die, didn't he? Except for God delivering him. In all senses, he would have died. And it's an important point here, I think, is that when you look at this proverb and it says that God will make your path straight, it didn't say easy. It's often harder for a Christian. In fact, I would go as far as to say always harder for a Christian. Daniel was delivered, but for many people today, acknowledging God would mean beatings, loss of a job. The family turning against them, jail, or even death. So the road that is spoken about is not always a comfortable one, is it? It can be full of hardship. Another person I want to look back in the Old Testament, and I do realize that the proverb was after him. Okay, so he wasn't following the proverb. Maybe Solomon looked at him and thought this would be a good little verse to put. Maybe it worked the other way. And it's a joy tonight, not only to talk about my favourite passage, but also my favourite person in the Old Testament. And that's Caleb. I'll remind you who he was. Sure you know. He was one of the Israelites that had come out of Egypt, come across the Red Sea, and they were going towards the Promised Land. Caleb, along with the rest of the Israelites, had seen all the miracles that God had delivered them through. And they were coming towards the Promised Land. Moses decided to send a leader from each of the tribes to go and spy out the land. You remember the story. And they came back. You can look at it in Numbers 13 to 14. And the whole assembly of all the Israelites were gathered around. And the spies then started to project fear and doubt into the whole assembly. This is not for us, guys. This is disaster. And Caleb, not Joshua, Caleb was the first one that actually silenced the whole lot. Joshua backed him up, and we know it was Joshua that led the people in. But it was Caleb, bless him, who was the one that decided to silence the crowd. And he said to them, "We should go up and take possession of this land, for we can certainly do it." Now the spies weren't content with that. They decided to turn the rest of the people against Caleb and Joshua, to the point whereby they were going to stone them to death. And Caleb still says, "If the Lord is pleased with us, he will lead us into the land." I love this guy. I really do. And you know the story. Only Caleb and Joshua ever saw the promised land. Everyone else died. It took 40 years before Caleb saw the promise of his acknowledgement before God being to be fulfilled. Terrific faith this man had got. But he was prepared to acknowledge God, but also not lean to his own understanding. He didn't know how God was going to deliver them. Yeah, he wasn't arguing with these other spies. He didn't turn around and say, "You're telling lies." No. Yeah, it was going to be difficult. Yeah, I don't know how God's going to do it. I've got no idea. I can't tell you how. I just know that he will. I just know that he can. All his friends and neighbours turned against him. The whole assembly turned against him. And we'll find that with us Christians if we start to acknowledge God in your workplace, in your family maybe. That people don't always delight in what we delight in. They don't always see our faith as something that is to be treasured. And sometimes it can mean, for some people in some countries, their life. For Caleb, it was going to be stoned. As I said, 40 years went by. But he was prepared to stand, despite the trend of everyone else. He was prepared to be different. And he was prepared to acknowledge God. The last part of this proverb, which I touched on once or twice, is that it says God will make your path straight. He will direct your paths. Now, I don't know about you, but I do find God's direction difficult to discover sometimes. I've heard people say, "The Lord has told me to do this," or "The Lord has told me to do that." Well, I haven't got to those dizzy heights yet. Maybe one day I will hear God's voice and I'll be able to say, "Yes, God has told me to do this and that." But I haven't had that experience. My experience in my life is different. And they revolve, when I look back, around this verse. To trust God with all your heart. Not lean to my own understanding. And to acknowledge him in my ways. Very simple, and I'm not saying I get it right all the time, and I'm not saying that I'm perfect, and I'm not trying to say, "Well done, Derek, you know, you always do this." No, I don't. But I do think they are terrific values, terrific principles for Christians. I remember when I was at work once, quite happy with my job, but my father was a financial advisor, and there's quite a bit of money to be made in being a financial advisor, so I thought, well, let's have a look at another career. So I spent a week with them, more money, passed all the exams. I was ready to sign the paperwork, but I wanted to know whether this was the right direction for me. Is this something I should do? So I prayed. I trusted God for an answer. I sought of his advice. I didn't hear any voice from heaven. And for me, no scripture jumped out from the page. Somebody said to me, Derek, I think maybe God was saying to you, you decide. Because I'd run through the principles, hadn't I? I'd trusted God. Well, you'd have to take my word for it. I'd acknowledged him all my ways. I'd sought advice. I'd tried to do everything I could. And I wanted to do his will in this situation. I did not want to go forward on a major decision like this. Because it was major. Because the salary wasn't a normal salary I was used to. It was commission. But it could be very good. And in the end, I really do believe God was saying to me, you decide. What do you want to do? Now, you say, well, that doesn't fit in with this proverb. But I'm telling you what my experience is in my life. And that's why I hope it doesn't upset some of you. You might want to take issue with me on this. I believe God is more interested in our willingness to trust him. He's more interested in our willingness to acknowledge him in all our ways. He's more interested that we prove him in our lives than he is making decisions for us, providing we apply those principles to it. Now, you might want to challenge me on that. I'm not saying we should be casual about making decisions. No, I'm not. And I'm not saying we shouldn't seek God's will. But I do think sometimes we can get so worked up we do nothing. And I think by applying these principles, we actually can know God's direction. For me, I actually turned that job down. I didn't sign the paperwork. I stayed where I was. Some years later, facing a similar situation, same job, messing about with the pension scheme at Automotive Products where I used to work, I was faced with 11 months' notice that I could stay with the company under the new pension rules or I could leave. So I prayed about it. And I prayed about it. And I prayed about it. And every day I went into work, I changed my mind. I had no idea what to do. No verse of scripture came up. No voice from heaven. And I don't mean in any disrespect. But I know in the end, when I did decide to leave, I left on the Friday with the prospect that I was never going to be able to work in that line again. And Monday, the phone rang with one of my suppliers, do you want a job? So I'd acknowledge God. I leaned to my own understanding. I didn't know what to do. But I do believe in the end that God was there. I think we can think of Christians who appear to have made wrong decisions. I think sometimes the missionaries, they go abroad and come back and it hasn't worked out for them as the way we think it should have. And it's so easy to become despondent and to lose our faith. I believe, as I said before, that God's more interested that we acknowledge him, that we honour him, even when things appear to go wrong. That's our testing ground, like Job. God's name, I believe, is honoured when we don't stop praising him, despite the times when we are knocked back, when we continue to acknowledge him, even when we don't understand. We continue to acknowledge him and to love him, even when people around us say, you've got it wrong. So many people told me I'd got my Christian faith wrong. So many people told me, you're crazy. It won't last. 1967 I was baptised. So many people said to me, you're wasting your time. It's not for real. I said at the start of this that it is a proverb that is in retrospect. And I hope I've proven that to you in some way. And as I look back, I've given you one or two examples in my life, only one or two. There's many others which I could actually tell you about. Probably this proverb was true in Solomon's time, and it's true for Christians today. Soon we're going to share communion, aren't we? I don't know how the cross works, do you? Do you know how Jesus' work on the cross works? It's a mystery, isn't it? But we come here to acknowledge it. We come here to take the bread and the wine, to acknowledge that it does work, that God's grace is a saving grace, and one that we can trust with all our heart and lean not to our own understanding. Because we are his children. He has done the work for us. And this is how we, one of the ways in which we can acknowledge him, by sharing together the bread and the wine. So you may want to take issue with me on one or two things I've said. I can only speak how the proverb has worked in my life. And I hope I haven't upset anybody by saying things which may be different to the way you see this passage. I'm sure if I was doing a sermon, I'd speak about it in a different way, but I'm not. I'm just saying how it's worked for me. That's it. Thank you.